Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio presents OPA 102. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end of the table is Ken Phillips. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing real good, Kevin. It's good to be back together again recording.
WrestleMania always makes things a little bit tough on the schedule due to additional wrestling podcasting. And then life things pop up too, like anniversaries that just get in the way.
Yeah, I did have an anniversary that we were not able to schedule around, so that adds up to some time off from the podcast. But I'm happy to be back sitting with you here, Kevin, doing this again. Down in Stunt Granny or Studio or OPA Studio South, it's been a while, but we're back at it, man.
Yeah, as long as we don't slack off too much, I'm always kind of happy. So,
you know who's back in the news here recently, yeah. Kevin? Speaking of being back, our old friend Billy Mitchell of King of Kong fame.
Yes, he because we did leave things a little open-ended the last time we talked about one Mr. Mitchell. Because his scores were still being reviewed at that point.
Right. Of course, just a quick background. The people who've seen the King of Kong documentary, Billy Mitchell was kind of set up as the bad guy, quote unquote, in that one. The heel of the movie, if you will, to use a wrestling term that maybe our audience is familiar with. We saw in a recent story that he was accused of cheating with some pretty convincing evidence, I would think.
There's a little glitch. To register your high score on the site, to be extra clear, you need to play it on an actual arcade game and not an emulator.
Yeah, and he's had multiple records, and not just Donkey Kong, which is the game that we're most referring to here. Because his scores in question were recorded on a Donkey Kong game, and they believe it was done with an emulator, as we said. So this look bad for him. But then again, as we saw in the documentary King of Kong, he had always been like on the inside, really, with the people who were in charge of keeping the records. He was a donator to the Twin Galaxies organization, which is the record keeping organization for retro video games.
We still haven't gone back to figure out how exactly they got crowned that.
Yeah, I think it's just because he set up that photo shoot back in the 80s with like Time Magazine, when they had like the kids come there who said that they were like the high scorers in different video games. The one kid who lied about it and then became best friends with Billy afterwards, after Billy like called him out on FBS, which was a very funny moment in the movie King of Kong.
Yeah, yes, it was.
So, but the judgment came back from Twin Galaxies, and they stripped him not just of the Donkey Kong records that he was accused of cheating with, but actually all of the records that they have, including his perfect score in Pac-Man. Of course.
I did not check into what his other high scores were in this situation, but perfect score in Pac-Man, that wow, that is quite impressive. That how often does that get pulled off?
It's pretty rare. I'm not sure how many people have ever done it, but I would say less than 10.
That's always a little crazy when you strip someone of everything. Like, unless you have proof that he cheated on all of the stuff.
Right.
It would seem that this gentleman played a lot of arcade games.
Oh, yeah. He was good.
Yeah. So that's why it's just kind of like, well, why would you strip him of all of them? Just because you did verify he cheated on one. Like, that doesn't mean he cheated on all of them.
No, it's true, but...
It's damn true, Ken.
it does certainly call into question his general, you know, I guess it's kind of like Pete Rose being blocked from the Hall of Fame for gambling. I would think it's a similar, you know, you may disagree with that line of thought as well, but
one offense and you're out of here.
Yeah, I guess like you don't, you just don't feel like you can trust, or you don't want to necessarily promote this person for whatever reason. I don't know. It is arguable whether they would take away all of his records. Since they had not been called into question. But it was a bold move by Twin Galaxies, and really more than I was expecting, because I guess I was expecting them to, again, side with Mitchell. then I did a little bit of research and found out that Twin Galaxies is actually under new management now. And Walter Day is no longer with the company. He was the guy that dressed up in the referee suit in the movie.
Yes.
So he's no longer in the picture. So they, and it just seems weird to me that like an organization could be, and there's Twin Galaxies is still seen as, the Guinness Book of World Records, as like the arbiter in this category.
Oh, right.
And so Guinness dropped Billy Mitchell as from the records as well. Just based on what Twin Galaxies did. It just is a whole strange thing, and you know.
Yeah, it's one of those. I guess I didn't know this world existed. It has clearly existed for quite a while, because I do remember the beginning of that movie. Wasn't it early '90s? I feel like when they kind of started the timeline.
For the record keeping for Twin Galaxies.
Yeah,
I'm not sure, because they did. I mean, I think everything started with that, you know, from, I think it was like 83 or something, that Time Magazine photo shoot. That seems like where Twin Galaxies really got put on the map, in terms of a record keeper. But the film, I believe, took place in like 2005, the events of King of Kong. So that still, at this point, Kevin, ready to feel old? That's 13 years ago at this point.
that is not the worst of it. For whatever reason, there has been a rash of albums here recently that are getting anniversary numbers that I am somewhat shocked by. Rage Against the Machine's second album, Evil Empire, 22 years old.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's pretty old.
And I remember this this all-female heavy metal band called Kitty. Their first album came out 18 years ago, and I'm just like, ah, man, son of a bitch. And I know that it wasn't all that long ago that Vulgar Display of Power from Pantera was 25. So I think it's actually creeping close to 30 at this point.
I think I did see believe 20th anniversary edition of Soundgarden Super Unknown earlier today.
Oh.
But yeah, you're right. Those anniversaries are a little disturbing at times.
Twin Galaxies, by the way, was founded November 10, 1981.
Gotcha. And I believe it involved arcades, at least initially. I'm not sure, because I've never actually seen... I don't think in the movie they actually are in the Twin Galaxies arcade ever. Maybe I could be wrong. Eagle Eye viewers may know. but I believe that they were in other arcades. I know they were in other arcades when they were showing the competitions Billy right. Mitchell never showed up for, by the way, in the movie.
Mind games, man.
And it's just crazy to know that like he sent in these tapes to like upstage this Steve Wiebe, and then they were all, you know, faked. These were the fake tapes that he submitted to be able to be the first person to get, you know, over a million points. And I guess that's the other point side of the story we should mention, is that that means that Steve Wiebe is now recognized as the first person to get 100 or to get a million points in Donkey Kong, so...
Yeah, and that was the other thing, at least on the Donkey Kong end of things that was interesting, was the fact that a number of people have beaten their score in Donkey Kong.
Yes.
By a fairly large margin.
Yeah, I think the record keeper now is a plastic surgeon from Florida, maybe? Or maybe New York, I forget. Somewhere on the East Coast. Anyway, he's a plastic surgeon and apparently is unstoppable at Donkey Kong. So I think his score is like around 1.2 million, which from listening to people talk, and I have listened, yes, to some YouTube videos of Steve Wiebe giving talks on, I think there's some kind of like, I don't know. He would allow people to ask him about technique and things, but it was more about like, he was just giving a little talk about like the movie and things that happened afterwards. And, somebody asked like what he thought the high score could be. And he said somewhere around 1,200,000 or so, because there is like a hard limit there to that game as well, where the timer ends up killing you after 4 seconds when you get to a certain level. I forget what level you get to, but
yeah. Kill stage coming.
There's a potential Donkey Kong kill screen coming up if you're interested. yeah. Still funny. I don't know why. I mean, it really is a...
It is a very plain sentence, but just it's one of those things where repetition can just kind of get to you.
Yeah.
It can be nuisance and it can be funny. And I'm not sure what exactly makes that line be that crossed from annoying to funny, but...
The more you hear it, the funnier it gets for some reason.
Well, and I remember, did you send me the video that looped it for an hour and a half?
It was actually 10 hours.
Oh, 10 hours. Like, I think I listened to it for like a half hour.
Yes.
Like, I legitimately just sat there, like, after you sent that to me, I'm like, well, I'll see how far this gets. And I'm like, man, I got further than I expected.
Yeah, it was like, it was kind of funny to listen to and oddly soothing in a way, I think. Because it felt like it was like enough variation in how he's making this announcement that there's a potential Donkey Kong kill screen. But he always hits the notes there that there is a Donkey Kong kill screen coming up. He phrases it slightly differently enough that, it's somehow compelling to listen to over and over again. But our listeners can go back to a previous episode for that YouTube video, I believe.
I believe it was posted with that.
Or even do a Google search. That might be the quickest way.
Probably would be quicker.
Google, it's what's for searching. So, speaking of searching, Kevin, in video games, sometimes people don't go searching for high scores when they're playing video games. They might actually be searching for something else.
Well, you know, that's why it's kind of funny that, it's kind of strange that this article that Ken is referring to, someone found a foreign substance inside of their game cartridges. They bought them at I believe a flea market. Went to a market.
Correct.
And just, evidently he, and this is always crazy too, like, and I guess it is something that made me recall something else. I guess there's this copy of Roller Games was PAL, which was evidently, started or only sold in Europe and Australia.
Yeah, it's a different like screen drawing technology, it's very boring, and it's like the number of frames per second is different. But so like if you have the TVs in Europe versus the United States are incompatible, so like they had to come out with different versions of all the Nintendo games that were sold there versus here. So this guy was enough of a nerd to know that he was looking at a PAL version of Nintendo Golf. And
now I will admit it did take me back a little bit to a little bit of a music obsession of ours, KMFDM. And
I remember it well. Yes.
Yeah, they had the one album. Is it Go to Hell? That they came out with a remix almost right away, and they never sold that album. Like they did a limited release on the original.
I think Hell to Go was the new version that they did. Probably was that it? Was it, Go to Hell, and then the Hell to Go was like the remix version.
I think so.
Yeah, but yeah, you're
and
right.
I remembered, like, I was just going through like a used CD store, and I mean, this was probably like when we first moved here to Columbus. But I remember going through, and I'm like, oh my god. So I was a bit of a KMFDM nerd, enough of one to you know, have something like that alert me. So this guy finding that part of this game did kind of tug at the heartstrings a little bit.
Yes,
it's a different type of nerd, but I appreciate it nonetheless.
And I should clarify that I, of course, meant nerd lovingly. As one nerd, a fellow nerd, I should say. I think it's great that he picked up on it. So he thought it might have been a rare cartridge. But when he brought it home, it turned out to actually be a little strange to him, because he felt it. And again, I don't want to, you know, I mean this in a very loving way. He was enough of a nerd to realize that the cartridge felt heavier to him than it should have been. And maybe this would have been an obvious difference, because I think it was actually 50% heavier.
Yeah.
Which cartridges are not super heavy to start with, so you might not notice that.
50%. Yeah, that would definitely be, I mean, for me, just because I'm not that familiar with cartridges at this point in my life, I'm not sure that I'd notice, like, if that was heavier than normal.
Right, but this guy had, he actually had already had an American version of Golf, and he used it to compare against, and found that it was heavier. which is something that I'm guessing you wouldn't have, but this guy is clearly on in a different place in terms of having his familiarity with Nintendo cartridges.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I salute him, because most of the times when I want to play stuff, I'm like good going back to play something on Nintendo.
Well, the other thing I was thinking of is, like, I think it's good that he had that same cartridge to compare to, because I remember different cartridges, like, weighing a little bit different. Like, you got your Zeldas or Dragon Warriors, and they have the, you know, to be able to do the save states, they need to have, like, a little battery in there to, like, keep track of your games and things like that. Or at least I think that's how they work. But,
I guess I didn't think about how that worked.
Maybe I'm wrong on that. Now that I'm saying it, like, that would seem like your battery would die, and you'd be kind of screwed in terms of being able to save your game.
Because,
would it be like a flash memory then? I don't know.
Yeah, I remember ridiculously long games of Genghis Khan at your house, where we would just have to play in batches when I came over.
I remember at some point turning on that game and being like, I've had enough of this game. Because we would play that for way too long. And I guess that's kind of like a Risk sort of situation, like the board game Risk I never got into, but a similar idea where you're trying to take over territory, except the games would go on for freaking ever when there's like five people playing and like you're all waiting for your turn and somebody's like taking forever going through the menu. It could get a little old. But did we even say what this guy found in this video game? I don't think we got there yet.
Well, he said that they were silver shiny packages. But I believe that they don't actually know what they are, because the second he opened up the cartridges and realized that there was something in there, he called the police. Yeah. Which is probably a smart move, because even if it is a street drug, I would still hazard a guess that There might be some proper disposal that you are not not equipped with, depending upon what is inside of said packages.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, if you see like a stack of weed in there, maybe you just keep it.
Yeah, I guess I'd be half tempted to just throw it in the trash or something. But then it's like, I mean, not if it was weed, but if it was, you know, some kind of heroin or something. But I don't know if I would, if it would be bad for the environment, you're saying, to throw it in the trash, you think?
Well, I do think you're opening yourself up for trouble. I would dump it somewhere that did not have my my stench on it anywhere. I'd like stop at some random Target in their garbage bin and throw them in there.
Oh, you mean just in case someone would notice there's heroin in the trash? That seems unlikely to me, but I guess that could be possible.
The police are going to come back and charge you with possession of heroin because they found it in your garbage can.
Yeah, and they were able to trace it from the truck back to my house somehow. I don't know. It seems...
We're going to get CSI Miami on this thing, man.
Okay, well, as long as it's not...
David Caruso is going to show up at your front door.
Oh, shit. I was going to say, as long as it's not David Caruso himself, but it sounds like... if it's him, we could be in some trouble. Yeah, they might... If they can just enhance enough on their imaging, I think they'll be able to track it back to us. So
yeah, I mean, that is true. You really could just dispose of it on your own.
Seems like you'd be opening yourself to less trouble, less hassle than like, no, officer, I did find this in this video game.
Well, and that's the other crazy thing about this story. It's another one of those ones that I guess. We've talked about topics similar to this, but this guy does videos of opening up the video game and posts them to YouTube.
Oh, yeah. So
or does them live, I think. So he was doing this live when he opened it up and found the packages in there. Well, so that does kind of leave you open. Like, if you do it without a camera there... You can probably get away with just chucking it, but if you're posting on YouTube, you might want to call the police about that, just in case.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. I guess I skipped over that part of the story, but that does make more sense then, in terms of, I would be more likely to call the cops if there was like a video record of me in possession of drugs, just as a general rule, if I could avoid the... incriminate, you know, something that looks that incriminating, that would probably be a good idea. But it is an interesting question as to like why was that in there. I'm guessing like the person who sold it had no idea.
I would hope that that was not your pickup, just like, hey, dude, you need to come and buy these video games from my yard sale.
Right.
You know, because it doesn't really say, and they didn't, at the time of the posting of this article, they didn't have any additional information. But yeah, like, I kind of wondered how long, like, it's a game from the 80s. How many people were stashing drugs in a game from the 80s? Like, how long ago did you do that? Like, I guess I immediately thought it was old just because I'm like, not that many people are going to have these cartridges just sitting around to put drugs in them.
Yeah. So, and somebody had to like unscrew that and, you know, attach it in there somewhere, screw it back in again. So it is a strange question, and it does, I think, open up the possibility that someone mixed up their video game cartridges and... somewhere at some point in time, someone opened up their video game and was very disappointed not to see drugs in there.
Well, yeah, I also thought about that too. I'm like, wasn't someone pissed off about this?
Yeah, that certainly is a possible scenario, which would make this possibly a tragic artifact that has been found. Could have gone badly for someone potentially who was looking for this. Or expecting it to be there, so I don't know. It's certainly a non-traditional video game story, I would say.
It was something else. I mean, that would be pretty crazy to find.
Yeah, did you ever play Nintendo Golf, Kevin?
I'm not sure that I played Nintendo Golf. I'm not sure that I played either of these games because, it was Roller Games. I honestly don't remember Roller Games. Like, I do remember Golf. I feel like maybe our neighbors had that one, the McAleers.
Okay.
Because we did kind of hold off until Nintendo was almost too old to get a Nintendo.
Gotcha. My college roommate, Adam, was huge into Nintendo Golf. So we would have Nintendo Golf battles until late in the evening.
Well, Steve and I always played NHL 94 on Sega Genesis, which honestly a lot of people consider one of the greatest hockey games ever. So we would do a very similar thing until people would be pretty upset with us playing at 3 and 4 in the morning. People did not like us as neighbors.
Oh, yeah. I could see that being a problem if you're trying to sleep. And I'm guessing you guys weren't necessarily quiet as you were playing.
No, they were some pretty intense battles between the Hartford Whalers and the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Would you say that game was superior to, speaking of Nintendo, the Nintendo ice hockey?
Gameplay wise, definitely.
I probably can believe that.
There definitely is a soft spot in my heart, though, for Nintendo ice hockey. Because, yeah, you get the skinny guy, the medium-sized guy, and the fat guy.
Yep. You get to pick. You get to kind of draft your team.
Yeah, you get to draft your team.
I remember all skinny guys being a kind of a effective, if not necessarily orthodox team lineup for some reason. I don't know if that's ever been something someone's tried on you.
I guess from what I remember, I always feel like they were almost too weak sometimes. Like even if you kept one big guy back to kind of smack someone around, you were usually safe.
Hmm.
I did feel like the mid-sized guys were probably about the best and throw in a couple of...
Yeah, I guess you can't really throw any checks, really, if you're the skinny guy, probably.
Yeah, they bounced off of everyone, so there was... I would say that the system of hockey was a little bit slower at that point. So even the little skinny guys weren't necessarily as fast as maybe today's players.
Hold on, there was another video game, Blades of Steel.
Oh, Blades of Steel. Now, that one is, to me, that is an arcade game.
Mm.
Like, it did come to Nintendo, but I remember playing that in the arcade, and you had the big fight button. Yeah,
because there was fighting in that game for the Nintendo version as well, as I remember. You could kind of like control more than you like the original Nintendo hockey. You would just mash the button to kind of fight with somebody.
Oh, yeah.
But in this Blades of Steel, you could actually like aim for the head versus body blows.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a full on fight.
Yeah, that was pretty intense. I did enjoy that aspect of the game, which. I don't know what that says about me, but now did they have hockey or fighting in the Genesis version of hockey?
I don't think they did.
Gotcha.
I feel like you could check someone and injure somebody though.
Well, that just makes sense.
Yeah. So I do think that there are ways to injure your opponents, at least. But yeah, I don't think that they had fighting in that one. Because that was definitely... Blades of Steel, I feel like, was definitely a later time frame as far as you know.
Oh, it was well advanced from Nintendo Ice Hockey for sure.
Yeah, so I mean that's the other reason, because I feel like this, yeah, the Genesis one concentrated, like that one was, it was fun because it was fast. Like this is the first time, I mean hockey has I guess always been a fast sport, so the Nintendo version, even again with the little guys, was kind of slow. NHL 94 really brought the speed to you, and I don't even think that, Blades of Steel did that. It was fun to play, but there was something. Well, and having a home console is always a different thing too.
So you would say,
like, that... I always felt like there was a difference in that time, like when we were growing up, that the arcade games kind of had one vibe to them, and the consoles had a different.
When you say playing hockey at the arcade, my mind immediately goes to those big bubble machines that they they had there. That you would actually, you know, twist. It's kind of like a foosball situation, really, I guess. Except you can move these little hockey players around on tracks using these different handles.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of very foosball-y.
Except, yeah, that is such a weird concept to me. Like, I don't understand. There's no other sport that has happened. I guess, well, foosball. I guess if you want to say that, soccer. But, like, it is so weird to me that somebody made so many games of this, like, weird bubble hockey idea. And, like, I feel like it was pretty popular when I was younger.
Oh, yeah.
That people would like to play that. And these weird little plastic figurines walking around. Oh. You know, I guess it's from a pre-video game time, but... still, it had a charm even when there were arcade games
around. Oh, I am wrong. Uh-oh. Blades of Steel and Ice Hockey came out at the same time.
Woo.
Arcade version of Blades of Steel, 1987, and they said Ice Hockey for Nintendo was 88.
Well, I'm guessing the Nintendo console version of Blades of Steel is probably a few years later then.
At 88.
88?
Wow. North America was December of 88.
The arcade or the... home version?
Nintendo NES.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Was 88.
Crazy. That is hard to believe that those games came out in the same time.
Yeah, because I do feel like the gameplay on Blades of Steel was a little bit superior to that of Ice Hockey. But again, and, I do love both games in their own way.
I believe they had a voice that said Blades of Steel when you...
Blades of Steel.
When you were waiting to push the start button. So that was pretty exciting for 1988.
And I do kind of wonder, they said Commodore 64... Oh, no, by 90, I think we would have been off of the Commodore.
Wait, they had Blades of Steel for the Commodore?
1990.
Wow.
They even did Amiga.
Now, did they have, like, a controller for the Commodore? Or did you just have to use the keyboard?
I always remember using the keyboard for the Commodore.
Right.
And I still want to get the game Zack McCracken.
Oh,
it was a game that I never got a chance to solve, and it really gnaws away at my soul. Like, I need to find an Atari simulator. It's probably so ridiculously easy at this point compared to some of the other games I've played that I'd be like, oh, fuck, why am I still so obsessed with this?
So, just to give people an idea, because I remember Zack McCracken, it was similar to, like, a King's Quest, maybe, kind of adventure-ish game where you are trying to go through, solve puzzles, do kind of questy kind of stuff, and win the game. But it was kind of like
Zack McCracken in the Alien Mindbenders.
Yeah.
Holy smokes! This 1988 was a great year for video games.
It was a very good year. Yes.
I'm just throwing that out there. I can't believe that was 88.
Well, we've stumbled on something here. This was a hidden theme, obviously, that we had not anticipated. But 1988, great year for video games.
Yeah, release, October 1988. And that was for the Commodore. So I know that the DeFrango household was still using the Commodores in 88. Because I do remember playing said game.
Yeah, if you could have held on a little bit longer there, you might have been able to get that for the Commodore. But that's all right. Altered Beast was 88.
Oh my lord. Really? Sega Genesis was, or was that just arcade?
That might have been arcade. And Super Contra arcade. So
Super Contra.
That is a pretty big year, I would say, for video games, at least in my book, because those are some classics for me.
But yeah, I still kind of lament being able to solve this game, because I always felt like we got to some point very far along, I felt like, and then we just kind of ran in, we didn't know what to do at some juncture. Like, it was, you know, you kind of, you could never get enough of what they were requesting to finish the mission or what. I can't remember exactly what the problem was.
Sometimes those games could be pretty punishing, like the old games especially. Like, there might be something that you were supposed to do earlier in the game, and if you didn't do it, like, you wouldn't necessarily know.
Oh, right. Yeah, and there wasn't, I know we've probably referred to it in past shows, like a Nintendo Power. There was not a Commodore 64 Power to let you in on the secrets of these games. Usually if you couldn't figure it out, you were up shit creek without a paddle.
Yeah, it's it really sucked that there was, I remember when the video game, or GameFAQs.com came out. It was very exciting to me because that's kind of like what I always wanted. That was like the Holy Grail. I can remember being so excited when I got the Nintendo Power that had all the stuff about Dragon Warrior in there, because they had like all the spells and what you got at different levels and maps of all of the different locations and like where you had to go. So of course you can do that stuff online now and kind of take it for granted, but
right.
I was super psyched about it.
Holy smokes. Again, another thing that I guess I'm lying here. Nintendo Power started 1988.
Whoa. That is a big year. That you cannot deny that is a big year for video games.
That's a monster year for video games. Final issue, December 11, 2012. So it has been out of commission for a while.
Yeah, poor one out there. I guess I think I did realize that at some point that they had stopped making that. Which, I guess the internet, right?
Yeah, it seems a little silly.
That's exactly what we're talking about, because that kind of was the big appeal for Nintendo Power. Get the inside information.
Yeah. And I think I've mentioned this one too. I was always excited that I had figured out nearly all of the secret areas in Super Mario 3 before I got my Nintendo Power. I think there were like a handful of situations I hadn't found.
Yeah, I don't believe... No, Super Mario 2 came out in 88. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, Super Mario
3 as well? How is that possible?
Because the first Nintendo Power has Super Mario 2 on the front of it.
But then this says Super Mario 3, initial release date, October 88.
Holy smokes, really? I mean, that was a real jump in gameplay.
Well, the thing with Super Mario 2 is that they actually, if you notice, the game mechanics are like completely different than any other Mario game, really.
Oh.
You're like jumping on things and grabbing them, picking them up, you know, and you can like switch between different characters.
Oh, right.
That was like based on a completely different Japanese game, and they like swapped in Mario sprites to like change the playable characters to make it look like Mario.
Oh, okay.
Or Princess and or Toad, you know.
Yeah.
But it was actually a totally different game, which is why I think they might have been able to come out with two Mario games in the same year. Because the first one was really just kind of rehashed from a different game that they just kind of poured it in to look like Mario and released in the U.S.
I did not know that.
And then Super Mario 3 was the real new Mario.
So, yeah, I mean, that was badass.
Yeah, that was a pretty killer game.
Because I'm not sure if we got that in October or if I needed to wait the whole way to Christmas to get that puppy. But
I remember being very excited to play that game, and it lived up to the hype. Wasn't that I think you could fly in that game, right?
Yeah, you could become a raccoon and fly.
That was the first game you could fly as Mario. Very exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, because he had all kinds of different costumes in that one that you could pick up, because I believe the flying squirrel or whatever, that flying fox.
Yeah, that was the first one with different costumes.
Yeah.
You had, like, weird mechanics. Like, I remember the second Mario, you would, like, throw potions and, like, open up doors. You remember doing that?
Oh, yeah.
And pulling radishes out of the ground. That was a big, a big part of it.
Yeah.
Definitely different. stands out as a stepchild in the Mario history, for sure. But I guess that's the story that we were starting with this here was
the drugs in the video games, and we got completely sideballed.
That's okay though, But yep. I guess you don't know what you're going to find when you go digging into history, Kevin. Whether it's opening up a video game or digging somewhere in the desert and finding a strange quote-unquote alien.
Oh, man. Wow, I didn't feel like we needed much of a segue between the first two topics, but that one, that was something else.
Was that a tortured segue, you think?
That may have been a tortured segue.
Wait, Kevin, late breaking news from our last topic. Double Dragon 2, also 1988.
Oh, my Lord, come on. Greatest video game year ever. Double Dragon? I mean, if you told me River City Ransom was in 88 too, I'm going to throw down with anyone that doesn't say 88 is the greatest video game year ever.
Yeah, this is nuts. Mega Man 2, I mean, I don't know if that was the best Mega Man game, but Blaster Master in 88, do you remember that one?
I remember staying up really late playing that at a friend's house. River City Ransom was 89.
Ugh.
How dare they just ruin my dream.
They really could have done a good thing there if they would have been able to come out with that a little bit earlier.
Yeah, April 25th. I mean, you were, and that was in Japan.
Kevin, Bionic Commando, 1988.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm definitely throwing down with anyone that doesn't go with 88 as the greatest video game year ever. They can catch these hands if they don't think 88 is the greatest video game year ever.
And for some reason, I remember playing this one, The Adventures of Bayou Billy, 1988.
Yeah, it was not as big on that one. I'll throw that out there.
Okay, let's cross that last one off. Maybe that doesn't help to prove my point. So we'll edit that out. Don't worry.
Oh, okay. Sonic the Hedgehog was 91. I was starting to wonder. I'm like, hold on. Some of these games are almost Genesis level. I wonder when Sonic came out.
Not too.
I was a big Sonic fan. I felt like I was kind of phasing out of video games at the Sonic juncture, but.
Yeah. So basically, not only did I make the world's most tortured segue, I then immediately undercut
us off course.
So yeah.
Back to the topic that you tried to segue to, though. There is a mummy that has been found in the Atacama Desert, which is in Chile.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, because of the shape of the skeletal structure, it certainly looks very much like an alien. Because it has an elongated forehead, you know, narrow face, small body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very small, about 6 inches long, missing a pair of ribs, has a highly deformed head and face. Apparently, it is actually not ancient, which is what I think people thought. So it dates back to about 40 years.
Right.
But it is a very startling looking skeleton to look at.
Yeah, and I mean, they did determine that it was human.
Right. But I could see why people would be wanting to jump to the alien conclusion, just because the shape of the skull does give you kind of a classic alien look of the... aliens with the big heads, you know, that kind of go up in the air.
Yeah, pointy head, you know, again, slight face, slight frame. Everyone loves to picture aliens that way.
Yeah.
Although I do feel like they've gotten away from that a little bit recently and in a lot of shows. But yeah, it's certainly a classic look. That is so tiny.
Yeah, and there was something weird in the article, because I think originally people thought that the skeleton was from someone between 6 and 8 years old.
Oh,
which seems unbelievable that someone could be that, you know, live that long and only be 6 inches tall. so later, yeah. Later after further review, they revisited that and said that it couldn't possibly come from a child and would have been probably like a fetus that died between 14 and 16 weeks and was just put in the desert. So I guess the thing that helped preserve it was being in the desert environment, kind of naturally mummified the body in this case. So
yeah, drying anything out is a good way to keep it for a longer time frame.
Yeah, that's true. And keeping it somewhere where there's not, like, really a lot of living things around probably helps, too.
Oh, yeah, nothing to pick at it.
Mm-hmm. If it's kind of hidden a little bit in the desert there.
Yeah, well, it is very similar to, and obviously the polar opposite of just an ice situation. Everything's so dry and arid, it helps keep it, keep things together. With the ice, it encases it so much and is so cold that yes, it doesn't decay at all.
That's harder to come by, I would say. So the desert's not a bad way to go either.
Right.
Ironically, the hot or cold will do. so to kind of finish up on this story, I guess they found out that it looks like the girl of, in this case, of the skeleton, she seemed to have had a rare bone aging disorder, which is why the bones appeared to be possibly from a 6-year-old. So that caused a lot of the odd physical characteristics.
They said that though it's not it's not very common, but she had a number of maladies,
mm-hmm,
that caused the body to look the way that it did.
Mm-hmm.
Which again isn't, I guess to me, isn't terribly surprising after, as you point out, further review.
Yeah, that would be very strange to I cannot imagine seeing a 6-year-old that was only 6 inches tall.
Yeah, that would be really weird to see any human 6 inches tall. I just watched a couple of little people wrestle, and definitely taller than 6 inches.
I'm guessing probably around the 3 or 4 feet area.
Yeah, something in that that range. I don't remember what they said their heights were. I'm sure the announcer mentioned it, but I was paying no mind.
Right. I'm guessing.
But yeah, that 3 to 4 foot seems a reasonable guess.
So they still have the little people wrestling in WWE?
Well, these two actually happened to be pancakes at WrestleMania. New Day has been coming out and throwing pancakes into the crowd. And they brought out midgets dressed as pancakes because they were short stacks.
Okay. They were dressed as pancakes?
Yes. They had pancake costumes on.
Okay, crazy.
So both of these wrestlers that I saw happened to also be pancakes at WrestleMania.
Meaning they...
I saw them at WrestleMania New Orleans.
Okay.
Dressed up as pancakes. Then I saw them 6 days later in a professional wrestling match in Columbus, Ohio.
I thought somehow they wrestled as pancakes, which was... I was going to say that's very impressive to be able to pull off moves. Because, I mean, I'm imagining the pancake costumes would have been awkward to move around in.
Yeah, no wrestling match. They were just part of the show for New Day to come out with additional pancakes to keep their pancake theme going.
Now, were they thrown into the audience? Because I hope not.
The little people were not thrown into the audience.
All right, good.
Pancakes, however, still were tossed into the audience.
But not the living pancakes.
No, not the living pancakes.
Okay, good. I was concerned there.
The flour variety.
When you were telling that story, I was a little worried for them, but I'm glad that they weren't thrown in the audience.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Like some forbidden beach ball.
Well, Ken, since they thought that skeleton was old, we are wondering how one might see a skeleton from, well, an extremely long time ago.
That's true. Well,
yeah, that was a terrible segue. I think that was worse than yours.
That wasn't too good.
I was pretty terrible. But I'll call myself out.
Let me give it another run. Give another run at this one, Kevin.
Sure.
As we saw in this topic, sometimes what you see or what you think you know based on looking at a skeleton of, say, a quote-unquote alien may lead you to some assumptions that are wrong. And conversely, just because we haven't seen evidence of prior civilizations on Earth that have reached sort of, you know, that could have reached levels of technology of the humans... doesn't mean that they don't exist, Kevin.
It would seem that even within this article that we read, that this is almost more of a thought experiment than a seriously considered opinion.
Yes, and
they did present enough evidence that I believe that it would be fine to remain skeptical. Just because there's not enough, they just said that some of the time periods before, you know, we're here now, are buried so deep in the earth that nothing would really be left of it. Yes. Like, you wouldn't be able to find a skeleton or anything like that. Like, you'd have to look for other evidence within the soil for some type of events, but it would still be tough to determine whether that was from a civilized society or not. But
yes. It's kind of a weird thing because I guess I forget about this kind of idea that that's why there's like certain areas where people go looking for dinosaur fossils, because the ground in that area, for whatever reason, like that time period, you know, the dirt from that time period, for whatever reason, is close to the surface, and they're able to get at the fossils from that time period, like through plate tectonics or, you know, upheavals that happen
right
in the ground. That works out to be that way. In most places, you know, you can't find, you know, there's a lot of places you can't find dinosaur fossils, like because that part of the ground is not close to the surface, or it's been, you know, thrown down and turned to dust, you know, over the millions of years. So, I mean, the Earth has been, I believe, around for 4 billion years.
Well, yeah, and that's always one of those things that I remember. I'm trying to think of this show that for example, the oldest large scale stretch of ancient surface lies in the Negev desert. It's just 1.8 million years old. And we know that Homo sapiens have only existed for about 300,000 years. Yes. So, I mean, even talking between those two time periods is a huge gap of years.
So, like, even if there was, you know, theoretically, a species that kind of, like, had the global level reach that we do today, like, our period of this kind of global reach where we're everywhere was only really the last, I don't know, few hundred thousand years.
Right.
Not 100,000, a few hundred or 1,000 years. So it's like, in terms of the fossil record, that would be a very thin layer that you'd be looking for to find evidence of our civilization, if this is all that we have.
Yeah. If this is what it got built up to.
Yes.
It sometime in the past.
And there's reason to think that the civilization could be unstable, I guess. So it very well could be all that we have to go on. If that's the case, there was a previous civilization like ours. You would have to get lucky in a way to really be able to find where it was in terms of the fossil record, I guess. It's kind of like the takeaway that I got from this story.
Yeah, like I said, most of the evidence would probably be down to the molecular level, where you'd be looking for certain telltale signs of what the environment was at that point.
Yes, like changes in the atmosphere or et cetera, you know, dying off or extinction events.
Right. Yeah. So you'd almost have to find evidence like that, but it would still even be tough to confirm that, since that's kind of happened without civilizations too.
As far as we know, yeah.
Yeah, as far as we know. Because it was kind of interesting. I even think at the beginning of the article, he was wondering if the guy writing the article was wondering whether any industrial civilization that arises on any planet through their own activity would trigger a climate shift. Yes. It was the kind of the initial question that honestly got this conversation started when the NASA scientist Gavin Schmidt turned things around and talked about you know, the possibility of a civilization before us.
Yeah, and I mean, if you start using a lot of energy and you start moving things around a lot, you're going to just by process of thermodynamics, like, change the environment. Somewhat.
No.
So it would make sense for that to be able to show up, you know. So it, to me, this was actually a thought that had occurred to me before, and was interesting to see that somebody was actually kind of studying it.
It's not something that I had really thought about. I mean, I'm still kind of blown away. I remember talking about that story about the U.S. having like large cities in it, in its, you know, human civilized past. Like there was a city outside of St. Louis, you know, that's thousands of years old.
Native American.
Yeah, cities. Native American. Yeah. I think that that's just, that's kind of mind blowing, you know, just because obviously, you know, at least some of the history of the American Indian, but it's also something that I haven't really explored that much either. But knowing how long some of those civilizations may have been here is pretty wild. Yeah. Or that they're not all nomadic.
Yeah. Or the mounds that we have around this area.
Right.
I never went to check out that serpent mound down there. That's near the Hocking Hills region.
Right. Yeah, it's not that far away.
I will check that out at some point. Because, I don't know, it's just a... Like you say, it's interesting to kind of get a feel for the stuff that happened here in different times. And you wouldn't necessarily see a lot of evidence of it right now. And the mounds that are left over now have been worn down by, you know, rain and all that. So you can only imagine, I guess, what the original effect of them would have been or how they would have been presented to the people who were, you know,
alive using at that them. Time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Hey, yeah, that one always kind of got me when I was over in Italy, too. I'm like, how the hell has this been around since the 1500s? Like, that's kind of bonkers. But then, I mean, they're talking time frame millions of years old. Like, you know, I don't expect anything from the 1500s to still be around for the most part. So yeah, how can I really expect something from a few million years ago when the planet, like you said, is like 6 billion years old? How do you expect to see any evidence of that? It is so buried under layers and layers of Earth.
Yeah, it's a an interesting question. It's one of those things that kind of reminds you of how little we can say we actually know, and how much we kind of assume or tell ourselves that we know and just don't really think about.
Yeah, there's a lot of guesswork. This is still a crazy thing that that happens. I feel like we come to that conclusion a lot on this show.
Yeah.
However this all came about, it's a pretty crazy story in my opinion. Whether it's a religious variety or a secular variety of story, it's a wild ride.
Yeah, it's almost wilder to think that all this could have just happened for random chance, and there's really no reason for us to be experiencing this life. So I don't know. Depends. It depends on how you look at it, I guess.
Yeah, Ken is going deep because we had a Black Cloister Brewing Company, which is out of the fine city of Toledo, Ohio, Chained Dog Belgian Golden Strong Ale. And strong is an appropriate word considering that it's 10% alcohol.
It does live up to that descriptor.
I finished mine a little while ago, so I would approve. It's a little more of a, I feel like Stoss Brewing up in Delaware makes a fantastic golden strong ale. Theirs is a little more clear, a little more almost sparkling wine variety. This one kind of has that Belgian yeast esters part to it, so it makes it a little cloudier. It makes it a different variety of tasty, and in my opinion, Maybe I don't like it quite as much as Stoss's, but it's still a very good beverage.
I believe this is my first run-in with a golden strong ale, and I gotta say it's pretty good. It makes me want to try out this one from that brewer in Delaware you're saying, talking about.
100. You definitely should. Next ale trail, I'll take you up there.
All right, sounds good.
Okie doke, grandkids. I'm at Frango11. He's at Gozer33. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you may listen to us. And we are out.
Have a good week.